welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended or to be construed as legal advice. We hope that you enjoy the program.
Welcome to today's Ogletree Deacons Podcast. My name is Joe Beachboard, and this is the latest in our continuing series on COVID-19 and the impact on California employers. Joining me here today are two shareholders from our Los Angeles office. First of all, Betsy Johnson. Betsy, how are you doing?
Just fine, Joe. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And also joining us is another Los Angeles shareholder, Mr. Hardy Murphy. How are you, Hardy?
Doing well, Joe. Hope you're doing well as well.
Thank you very much. Well, these are obviously remarkable times. And our focus today is going to be on the privacy issues associated with the pandemic and California employment law. And I guess we have to start with sort of a fundamental question, Betsy, that I'm going to direct to you, being in such an unprecedented time like this, do employees still have privacy rights under California law?
Well, that's a great question, Joe. With all the attention on testing, measuring employee temperatures, asking intrusive questions related to the employee's health and the health of the people they live with, in addition to any obligations employers may have to report information to public health officials, it would seem like California has thrown its privacy rights out the window. But employers still have to balance individual privacy rights, which are guaranteed to each of us by Article 1 of the California Constitution, against their obligations to provide a safe workplace for all employees. And before an employer can go in and preempt those privacy rights, the employer has to show a compelling interest and that there is no other way that the employer can accomplish its purpose other than intruding upon the employee's privacy rights. Certainly, given the extreme threat to public and individual health and safety created by the corona pandemic, California employers are given considerable leeway in adopting measures that will ensure that sick or possibly contagious employees are not at the workplace.
So, Betsy, what are the kinds of privacy issues that have been raised during this coronavirus pandemic we're all living through?
It's interesting. As things have evolved with the pandemic, the number of types of issues that we've been seeing are changing every day. Generally, employers are asking us whether it's permissible to ask employees about their current health status, whether they can require employees to submit to temperature screening prior to starting work, whether they can require employees to be tested for COVID-19. In addition, employers are concerned, or at the same time, they're concerned about running afoul of the very well-established principles under the Americans with Disabilities Act, the state, federal, family medical leave acts, and of course, the California Fair Employment and Housing Act. And this would come up if they refuse to allow employees to work based on a subjective assessment that the employee poses a risk to the workplace.
Hardy, let's bring you into this discussion. It sounds to me like employers face a Hobson choice. They can either be sued by an employee who claims they didn't bring them back to work, or they can be sued by coworkers who say they didn't go far enough to protect them at the workplace. What's your read on all that?
Thanks, Joe. I appreciate that. That's a fantastic question as well. Fortunately, we have various federal and state agencies that have been implementing and providing various guidance for employers to consider when analyzing that particular question that you just asked. And the guidance that has been provided has put forth various measures that can be taken to protect the health and safety of both individual employees and the workforce as a whole, including vendors who may happen to come to the workplace establishment. For example, the EEOC has established a coronavirus and COVID-19 webpage, and it's very informative. This webpage is designed to consolidate relevant coronavirus and COVID-19 information, and it actually contains a link to what employers, quote, should know about COVID-19 and the ADA, the Rehabilitation Act, and other EEO laws, close quote. That's important because when you go to this particular FAQ, it provides numerous information with respect to how employers should be handling issues such as taking the temperatures of employees and other screening measures. The EEOC has repeatedly updated these guidelines. What the EEOC has stated, Joe, is that given the pandemic, it's actually now permissible under the ADA for employers to administer COVID-19 tests to determine whether employees have COVID-19 before allowing them to enter the workforce. Now, historically, these tests have been limited to particular tests was job related and consistent with the business necessity. The EEOC has made clear, however, that given the current pandemic and the threat to the workforce and the health and safety of others, if someone is allowed to enter the workforce who may have COVID-19, that business necessity is met. And so employers actually can administer COVID-19 tests to their employees before allowing them to enter the workforce. There's an issue, though, there, Joe, and that is the EEOC has made it clear that the tests must be accurate and reliable. And there are so many opportunities for a false positive or a false negative that it's unclear whether these tests are accurate and reliable. On April 20th, the FDA came out with guidance on what types of tests may be accurate and reliable, but you know that still is unclear. So, and another issue for employers to consider, Joe, is that they may not have access to these particular COVID-19 tests. In that regard, what's an alternative for an employer to do? An alternative is for the employer to take the temperature of its employees and ask probing questions to determine if they have COVID-19. Now, remember that under the EEOC guidance, temperature taking is considered a medical exam under the ADA and also under the California Fair Employment and Housing Act. Now, these laws normally place restrictions on medical exams, but the EEOC has made it clear that allowing for taking employee temperatures during the COVID-19 pandemic is a permissible medical exam under these circumstances. So what do you do? At the same time that the DFEH cautions employers that regardless of the crisis caused by the pandemic, that employers should not discriminate or retaliate against employees based on their protected status, including disability, the California DFEH has also issued guidance in the form of FAQs for employers to follow with respect to administering these particular tests.
That's great information, Hardy. I think the screening process is probably the biggest concern that I hear employers express. And so that's very helpful information. But what other issues should an employer consider before they implement some sort of screening system or process?
Well, let's go back to fundamentals. And the CDC still encourages various preventative measures such as social distancing, washing hands, making sure that employers and employees take the precautions necessary to prevent the spread of COVID-19. But beyond just the testing issues that we're talking about here, a critical consideration for employers to think about is whether or not they need to actually compensate the employees for the time spent going through the screening process. The California Supreme Court has issued various decisions on this with respect to if an employee should be compensated for the time spent engaging in what arguably might be de minimis activity. Here, you have to think about it, depending on the employer's environment and the number of employees involved, whether they have staggered start times and how many employees are coming in at one particular moment, you might have a situation where employees are going to be waiting in line for anywhere from 5 to 20 minutes. So it's critical to think about these particular issues and whether or not the time spent waiting to go through a temperature screening needs to be compensated under California law. Ideally, what we've been counseling employees is that the screening process should be conducted, if possible, while the employees are on the clock. In this regard, some employers are allowing employees to clock in before they actually do the screening. Some employers are adding time to the time that an employee has spent at the workday for the particular screening process. So it's important to think about these issues when it comes to determining whether or not employees should be compensated. Another example is if you're an employer asking employees to take their own temperature before coming into work. That's an activity that could be construed as being a prerequisite to the employee performing the employee's job. In that regard, it would be advisable to compensate the employees for the time they spent taking their own temperatures. So these are some of the other issues that employers should be thinking about.
Betsy, Hardy's comments made me think about the wide range of wage and hour issues that might arise in this whole area. For instance, if an employee is sent home or told not to come into work, do they have to receive reporting time pay under California law?
Well, Joe, as with a lot of things in California, that's debatable, and it depends. The California wage orders, which have been around for a very long time, have requirements in them that state that employees are entitled to receive what is called reporting time pay whenever they're scheduled to work and show up for work, but they're not allowed to work or they're sent home without having to have completed at least half of their regular work day. The reporting time provisions are, as I said, they've been around for a long time. They're very strict. Essentially, the requirements are that any time an employee is required to report to work, but is not put to work or furnished with less than half of his or her usual schedule, the employee must be paid for half the usual scheduled day, but in no event less than 2 hours or more than 4 hours. Now, let's put that in context. So, for example, if an employee is usually scheduled to work 8 hours and they report to work, but they go through the temperature screening process that Hardy talked about, and the employer determines that they should not be at work that day and sends them home. In that case, they would be entitled to 4 hours of California reporting time pay because that would be half of their regular shift. On the other hand, if an employee is scheduled to only work 3 hours and they show up for work and they're turned away because they have an elevated temperature, they would be entitled to the minimum of 2 hours because half their regular shift would be 1.5 hours, which is less than the 2 hour minimum. In addition, there have been some California cases, and that has direct implications for what Hardy was just talking about. If employers require their employees to take their temperatures at home, that is in effect reporting to work, even though they're not physically coming to the workplace. So that could create additional reporting time issues. Now, there are some exceptions. The wage orders in California law make clear that reporting time pay is not required whenever the employer's operations cannot begin or continue due to threats to employees or property, or when civil authorities recommend that work not begin or continue. With that in mind, in today's world, if an employee is sent home or unable to report for work after they've taken their temperature at home because they have an elevated temperature, it's questionable whether or not they would be eligible for reporting time pay because they're not actually fit to come to work that day if they exhibit symptoms or pose a threat to their coworkers. It's also questionable whether reporting time pay would apply if the employee is sent home after answering yes to some preliminary questions, which we will, you know, we can talk about in a minute.
Well, Betsy, it sounds like with most things under California wage and hour law, it's complicated, right? And may require further discussion with your Ogletree Deacon's attorney. But let's assume we get beyond all these various wage and hour questions. How should an employer go about implementing a screening program?
Well, as with many things, Joe, the devil is always in the details. But before we get into the specifics of the screening process, we want to emphasize that employers, before they start taking people's temperatures, need to develop a protocol. And we always recommend that that sort of thing be in writing. Protocol for doing the screening that protects not only the employees who are being screened, but the employees or the individuals who are conducting the screening. Most importantly, the screening protocol must be used consistently. So employers cannot just screen employees for elevated temperatures because they, quote, look sick. Everybody coming into the facility, and in many cases, vendors or visitors, should be subjected to the same exact screening process. As part of the screening protocol, employers should provide advance written notice to the employees that explains that the employer will take the employee's temperature, that explains whether or not the employer will actually record that person's temperature, and if the temperature is recorded, what's that information going to be used for? It's also important to note that while we may put together a screening protocol, the CDC and most people in the healthcare world have said that people who do not have a fever, that doesn't necessarily mean that they aren't contagious with the coronavirus. Therefore, employers are opting to adopt a protocol that includes asking employees preliminary questions before they do the temperature screening. So the questions can include, one, are you experiencing any of the following symptoms? Fevers, chills, coughs, shortness of breath, sore throat, loss of smell, taste, etc. Two, do you live with someone or care for someone who is exhibiting those symptoms? Three, do you live with or have been in close contact with someone who has tested positive for COVID-19 in the last 14 days? And four, if employees are coming back, for example, from a temporary furlough, you can ask them if they have been anywhere or traveled in the interim to areas where there are what the CDC has defined as epicenters of COVID-19. That question you only have to ask once. A lot of this information is available on the CDC website, and employers can get more detailed information from the CDC website. And in fact, the CDC recently updated the types of symptoms that can be indicative of someone who is potentially exposed to coronavirus. The new symptoms are the ones I just mentioned.
Well, Hardy, suppose we ask these questions and somebody answers yes. What does a California employer do then?
Importantly, Joe, you have to send the employee home. Can't allow the employee to enter the workforce under those particular circumstances. Instead, what the employer should do is take the employee's name down, the employee number, phone number, if available, and send the employee home. And at that point, you should inform the employee that human resources will contact them with additional questions and instructions. Importantly, when human resources contacts the person with respect to the questions that Betsy identified, the answers to them, those should not be recorded in any way that's going to be a violation of the employee's privacy rights. So human resources, we recommend, should not be recording the specific answers to any of these particular questions. Send the employee home, let the employee know that human resources is going to contact the employee, and human resources should follow up.
Well, that seems pretty easy. But what happens if the employee answers no to one of those questions?
Understanding that we're focusing on taking an employee's temperature here, what should happen next is that the employer should go ahead and take the employee's temperature before allowing the employee to enter the workforce. The guidance from the various governmental authorities is that the temperature should be taken through some sort of frontal non-contact temperature measurement method by the temple or the forehead. So the employee's temperature should not be recorded. I want to emphasize that. You know, Betsy talked earlier about some of the privacy issues as well as I did just a second ago. When you're measuring the employee's temperature, the employer should have someone do it who is trained on the proper use of some sort of digital thermometer. And again, due to the fact that we're dealing with confidential information, it's better to have someone who is in security or loss prevention do the temperature screening rather than the employee supervisors. That's important. Keep in mind, though, as I mentioned earlier, there are the potentials for false negatives, false positives. So in this regard, you could have a situation to where an employee will register a temperature that is not elevated, but could still be infected with COVID-19. And in that regard, the guidance is that the elevated temperature is 100.4. So if an employee has a temperature above 100.4, that's considered elevated, and you should send the employee home. Now, after you send the employee home, you should advise the employee to consult with a healthcare professional before getting tested for COVID-19. Employers can require a fitness for duty test as well for allowing the employee to return to work. But remember that the healthcare professionals are really busy at this point in time, such that getting an actual fitness for duty certification may not be easy to obtain. And so the EEOC suggests that employers allow less formal methods of communicating the employee is fit to return to duty, such as an email, a stamp, or even just information from the healthcare provider itself. Just last week, the CDC came out with some guidance in terms of how you actually do the particular temperature screening. The CDC suggests that the person doing the temperature screening should maintain social distancing when asking those questions that Betsy talked about a second ago. In that regard, when you get the no answer, as you just indicated, as I just described, that temperature should be taken by an individual who is behind some sort of protective barrier, whether it's a plastic barrier or some sort of glass barrier, that allows the person taking the temperature reading to reach around it, such that the person's not exposed to any sneezes or cough droplets or anything of that nature. If there are no protective barriers available, then the CDC recommends that the preventative measures such as face coverings, face masks be used as much as possible, gloves, eye protection, et cetera, by the person who's taking these particular temperature readings.
Some great information there, Hardy. Betsy, what privacy rights are implicated during this screening process, as Hardy's just kind of laid out for us?
There are still some privacy rights here, even though we've been talking about asking some very intrusive questions and doing some rather intrusive things to employees before they come to work. And it's pretty clear that while the state and federal agencies are giving employers a lot of latitude in this area to be able to protect the workplace, they still must keep in mind the privacy concerns and the confidentiality of this information that they're obtaining from employees. Just as Hardy said, the employees, while they're waiting online, they need to keep their distance from each other, their social distancing. The screener, of course, has to be mindful not to announce employee information. So they want to do it in as confidential a way as possible, or there's a risk that the employer will violate the Americans with Disabilities Act or the new California Consumer Privacy Act or the California Confidentiality of Medical Information Act. Now, employees are in California are pretty savvy about their rights, and not surprising when faced with a requirement that they be screened for their temperature, that some employees might say, no, wait a minute, I don't want to do that. That violates my privacy. I have a right to privacy in California. So what can an employer do if an employee refuses to have their temperature taken or refuses to answer those questions we discussed before? The ADA currently allows employers, based on their refusal to be screened or refusal to answer the questions, that allows employers to bar an employee from the workplace and until they're ready to cooperate. Now, we want many of these employees coming to work these days are in critical infrastructure industries, and we want them to be there. So in order to obtain the employee's cooperation, the employer should provide the employee some assurance that these measures are really required to protect the safety of the workplace, and that we are adopting procedures that are designed to keep their information as confidential as possible. Now, in spite of privacy concerns we've been mentioning, the EEOC, actually, the federal agency, has said that it's okay for employers to keep a log of employee temperatures in order to have a record of that information. The condition for that is that the employers have to keep that medical information confidential. Now, as we know, California, in many cases, takes a different view than the federal agencies. In fact, that would be the case here. We do not recommend that California employers keep a log of the actual employee temperatures. That would very easily violate the employee's privacy as well as Confidentiality of Medical Information Act. Employers that decide to do the temperature screening, not only for their employees, but of vendors and visitors who enter the facility, should adopt the exact same protocol for those individuals. And the process for screening those third parties should also be done as confidential a way as possible.
Well, thank you, Betsy. Before we wrap up, any final words for our audience today?
Yeah, I think, Joe, given the all the privacy implications as well as the ever-changing regulatory environment, the decision to implement a temperature screening program requires employers to really carefully weigh the benefits of screening the employees before they interact with their coworkers against the administrative burden of doing it properly and consistently, as well as the intrusion into California employee privacy rights. And if at the end of the day, you know, on that balance tips in favor of doing the screening, employers should certainly make sure that they're following all the suggestions that we've made today.
Well, that wraps up today's podcast on California employee privacy and the COVID-19 pandemic. My guests were Betsy Johnson and Hardy Murphy, both shareholders in the Los Angeles office of Ogletree Deacons. Thank you both for joining us today, and I hope that you will join us for another California podcast in the near future.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended or to be construed as legal advice.